Right. So it's 1 o'clock. Actually, it's a little bit after. It's 1:01 on March 26, 2024. My name is Ryan Edmondson. I'm board staff. And I'll just introduce the other staff that's here. And then if you guys get up to speak, I'll have you just introduce yourselves. For brevity, I'll just, if you speak and you're attending virtually, then I'll let you guys introduce yourselves. We won't go around the table, but for staff, Yasmin's here. She's recording the meeting. She'll capture any oral comments if necessary. Selena and Sherry are both here. They both administer the anesthesia and sedation evaluation and the process by which permits are granted. And then Christina is to my right. And then myself. Seamus. Oh, he is here. Cool. There is at least one board member present right now, Dr. Hero. He is likely just observing and listening, but he's attending as himself and representing himself, but not attending himself representing the board. I don't even know that he's got any comments. We'll figure that out as we move forward. But Dr. Anthony Hero's presence is not as a member of the board. Similar to that, Dr. Caputo is attending also on behalf of himself and not as a member of the investigative committee. And then Dr. Matthew Arnall is attending on behalf of himself, possibly for an association that he belongs to. I'll let him address those things later, but he is not attending as a member of the committee and on behalf of the Anesthesia and Sedation Committee. If all of that is false that I just said, it's now true. Don't attend on behalf of any committee or board that represents this board. So today is the oral proceeding to discuss the rules that the board has proposed to change in relation to anesthesia and sedation. There's a myriad of changes that have come about, and it starts with definitions and goes to 1307. And there's several amendments that were made, some of which I think the board recognizes that they may need to change themselves. Once the final rulemaking is filed with the Secretary of State, we have to conduct an oral proceeding. That's what today is. Once that's final at the Secretary of State, any written comments that are submitted go into the oral proceeding packet. What does that mean? It simply means that those people do not have to relay again what they've already written in written comments. Yasmin's captured those. We will submit those to the board for their April 16th special board meeting. It's on a Tuesday. And so if you're here, you're welcome to read those into record or just let them be the way they are. No need to reiterate those. Those will be discussed on April 16th. If you were going to make oral comment today, we would ask if you make an oral statement today that has not already been written and provided to the board, that you provide those to Yasmin Bustamante. Did we say close of business tomorrow, correct?
That's correct, tomorrow.
Yep. So by close of business tomorrow, those will be the accepted written comments of those that speak today during the meeting. Some of the things that I will say is the decorum for today. This is not the day or the time to debate oral comments, other than you're making comments based on what's already in the notice of final rulemaking, and you can debate those. But if I'm going to use names as a hypothetical situation, but if Dr. Caputo decides to make a comment, and Dr. Arnall, I'm sure he's going to love all of Dr. Caputo's statements, but if there's a couple that he doesn't like, he wouldn't stand up then and say, I disagree with Dr. Caputo's comments. This is literally an open forum for everybody to provide all of your own comments, but not really an opportunity to debate or have some sort of, I'll say, perfunctory issues with other people's comments. That would happen at the April 16th board meeting. And with that, Seamus, go ahead.
I don't want to cut you off.
I just want to also say, you know, reiterate what Ryan just said. This is an opportunity to provide your oral comments based on the proposed rules. It isn't necessarily a forum to debate the person who came before you, but again, Ryan has laid it out pretty well. So if there are any questions going forward, then please, you know, if anybody is not clear on the process, please just ask Ryan, and you know, Ryan will help you clarify the process going forward.
Nope, you're good. So in fact, that's where I was headed. Thank you for clarifying my pretty well done statement about the process. Does anybody have any comments or questions regarding how we're going to proceed? And if so, you guys would have to come forward to one of these mics. Anybody else virtually, feel free to ask your questions.
Ryan?
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if anyone has already reviewed comments that were submitted, but if we have questions, would it be appropriate to ask some of those now? Because I think it kind of addresses some of the comments that were made, or should those just be directed to the board?
Yeah, I think so. Oral comments through this process are submitted, they're disseminated to the board. And then once they're disseminated to the board, they're, that's when they would be debated on April 16th. I would say I would reserve any comments related to any of that until April 16th.
Or at least address them here and they can be put in the record, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you make your comments clear. Go ahead, Seamus.
And to that point, Ryan may ask clarifying questions regarding what your statement is to ensure that, you know, the staff is capturing it correctly. Don't be alarmed by that. If there is any, clarifications that need to be provided from a staff level on, you know, anything that's in the proposed rules, you know, we'll take those one at a time and just see where that goes. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Yasmin, do you have handy the people that have submitted written comments already? We don't need to read them into the record, but.
I do. So we received updated comments from the AZ Society of Dentists, Anesthesiologists, and Dr. Arnall submitted those. We also have a separate written comments from Dr. Arnall. We have comments from Dr. Snell, Dr. Fukami, Dr. Harris, Dr. Caputo, and we have comments from, forgive me if I butcher the name, Schenfeld.
Okay. And that's all you, that's all we have right now?
Exactly. That's all.
Does anybody present have written comments that you want to submit that haven't been submitted yet, either online or in person? Okay. Thank you, Yasmin, for the summary of that. So I think for ease of running the meeting, I'm going to ask if the two present have any oral comments that you want to state. And if so, I'll have you speak first and then we'll move to the people online or virtually.
Just a general comment.
Okay.
And Ryan, if you could just have them identify themselves by name and recognize them.
You were late to the meeting, so we addressed that very first point. Just kidding. Just kidding, Seamus.
Thank you, Mr. Edmondson. For the record, my name is Kevin Earle. I'm representing the Arizona Dental Association at the request of Dr. Regina Cobb, the executive director, who could not be here today. I'm also the former executive director of the Dental Association and the former executive director of the Board of Dental Examiners. My comments today will be complimentary. This has been probably one of the world's longest gestation periods for a set of regulations, almost as long as the gestation period for the last time we looked at these regulations, which was partially during my tenure. I think it goes back to 2007, 8, and 9. And it was a very cumbersome process. There's been many, many changes in the tools and practices for the delivery of anesthesia and sedation, and many changes in the practice styles and in engaging the support of qualified anesthesia providers. I particularly want to compliment the committee and the board on fashioning a less cumbersome way to employ qualified anesthesia providers in dental practices, but also the fact that we are learning through this process a better way to work with your companion boards at the Board of Nursing and the Board of Medical Examiners. We went through a bit of a difficult time at the legislature last year. We worked out those issues in a way that I thought was a relatively good outcome. It is important for the board to have an opportunity to be aware of any incidents that relate to anesthesia, and likewise, and important that the Board of Nursing and the Board of Medical Examiners be informed on a timely basis about those incidents, so that if action needs to be taken on an emergent basis, that they have the opportunity to do so and that they can quickly open an investigation when necessary. But again, kudos to everybody who's been involved in this process. It is a compliment to all of your commitment to better public safety that you participated in this process to the extent that you did. And that's all I have to say.
I remember when we first started this, you gave us the warning that it was going to be a long process. And I made the joke, I don't think we're going to test drive the drugs that put us to sleep to make it that long. And we still ended up being long. So, okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Did you have any comment that you wanted to?
I'm just here. There was a calendar error and my attorney thought it was supposed to be in person. So I'm just here to take notes.
Okay. Actually, it was my error. So it was just going to be in person, but I screwed a bunch of stuff up over the weekend. And so we decided to open it up virtually. So, but thank you for participating in anyway. Okay. So with that, I think, if you want to make, oral comments, whether it's to reiterate something you've already put in writing or something new, go ahead and raise your hand. And then based on the ones attending virtually, and then based on the raised hand, we'll take them in the order in which they are. So keep your hand raised until after you speak. So currently we have two, and we'll start with Dr. Caputo. Go ahead, Dr. Caputo.
Thank you, Ryan. I'll start off with a comment that I will follow up with in writing, because it wasn't part of what I had submitted. I will probably plan on making this again to the full board when they're present, but I had originally presented this to the committee when it first met, not maybe in the format with which I'll present it now, but I do think it's important as a regulatory agency to understand that the specialty of anesthesia in dentistry is the only practice that effectively is impacted by two sets of statutes and rules. Any dentist can practice dentistry or their specialty without a permit. Anesthesiologists cannot. So even though we get licensed in a state that we're going to practice and enjoy all the benefits of that licensure as dentists, we cannot practice until we obtain a permit. So in many ways, we're negatively impacted by this process. And I have long advocated that the board look at this group of practitioners differently. I see violations in our ADA code of ethics from the perspective of justice, because I don't think it's fair to us in our particular area of practice. In the effort to do good or the principle of beneficence, we end up causing some level of maleficence. And so we violate our duty to not do any harm, because by trying to create rules that are meant to, or at least intended to, improve safety and provide better patient outcomes, we actually restrict and limit opportunities for practice by dentist anesthesiologists. And so I want to articulate that point, because I do think there's a way to look at the practice of anesthesia and dentistry differently than we currently do. And I really would like to see this board embrace that opportunity. And it would be some simple changes to existing rules or even the proposed rules. And I realize this was talked about at some length at various times during the course of this committee, but never really grabbed any kind of foundation or roots to with which people took it to another place. But, you know, I was thinking about this today, and I'll sort of close with this as I move into my other comments. But for whatever reason, To Kill a Mockingbird jumped into my head. And, you know, the premise of To Kill a Mockingbird was to provide representation for someone who was falsely accused of a crime. But because of the social structure at the time, the odds were against that person in their pursuit of justice. And if you're familiar with the book, what we all know well is that the attorney, Atticus Finch, pressed the jury that was going to judge this person to look at them from a different perspective. And by virtue of looking at them from a different perspective, try to see the world the way they might see it, or if not, change their mind based on that different perspective. And so what I think I would like the board to do through staff, volunteers, and members is to consider looking at these rules through the lens of a dentist anesthesiologist, and how some of the requirements that we place, though well-intended, actually create a higher burden for us that might not necessarily be appropriate. So again, I'll follow that up in writing, but it's something I do think it's important to share, because I do think that that process is somewhat unfair for us in this profession. And I think part of the irony to this is, as well, as we all know, we have a pathway, as Kevin referred, our companion anesthesia providers in medicine and nursing. We have a pathway for those practitioners to work with dentists. And the requirements for dentist anesthesiologists are well beyond those requirements for nurses or physicians. In fact, their particular boards don't have near the same requirements for them to practice their area of training or specialty that we require in dentistry. And so that unfairness, I do think, merits some scrutiny. And so that's something I'd like to at least make known to the board as it goes through this process of review and approval of these rules. With that, I'll go into the comments that I presented in writing. And one of the things, and I had this discussion with Dr. Arnall, and I'm sure many of you are already familiar with this, but in light of how the document was presented, it's 72 pages, as we all know, but it includes two notification receipt pages. And then the numbered pages start on what's the third page. So as a result, it ends up being two off. So the references I'll make to page number are the actual page numbers of the packet, the 72 pages, and not the page number of the third notification receipt package that starts technically on page 3, but's listed as page 1. So with that, I started my comments with on page number 11, and basically just emphasizing that if you're absorbing a drug through the oral mucosa, by definition, that's parenteral administration, not enteral. And so that should be corrected. Page two, just to be consistent with ADA guidelines, page 12, changing the word appropriately to normally. I think that's one of the definitions, and I'll just jump to my documents to ensure I'm saying that correctly. On page 12, yeah, that's the definition of minimal sedation, and where it talks about, patient ability to continue. Let's see what I said there on that. I apologize for that. I should have been better prepared. Appropriately to normally. I don't know if that's in that particular definition of minimal sedation or moderate sedation. But within that definition of minimal sedation, I also made the comment where it says the patient's cognitive function and coordination may be modestly impaired. And I would encourage the word to be changed to minimally, because modestly by definition infers moderate. And we're talking about minimal sedation, not moderate sedation. Next. On page 17, this was just in reference to the language before, qualified anesthesia provider, changing an to a. So a qualified anesthesia provider versus n qualified anesthesia provider. Number five is in reference on page 20 to a question I was going to ask, but to pose it to the board, I was just curious why there was going to be a decrease in fees. And one of the things that I recognized here was some changes in the renewal periods. And so I don't know if that's intentional or not, but I would call the board's attention to various periods that are presented for the different permit levels. It seems that some are existing on a 2-year time frame, and then within the same permit level, they talk about a 3-year time frame, and then even a 5-year time frame. And then I saw within, I believe, the 1302 permit level, they talk about a 6-year time frame. And so I'm just curious if that becomes confusing, and I think of this more from a process of developing forms and how the staff might handle this. If those years end up being overlapping, I don't know if that becomes more of a burden from a confusing and challenging standpoint or not. And I don't know if that was intentional. So I just wanted to bring that to the board's attention when they're looking at that. Similarly, and I'm going to look at this, and this has some pertinence to a comment I'll make later, and I may ask for clarification on this, but it's on page 21 in reference to dental consultants. And it talks about 72 hours, but Ryan, wasn't that decreased?
For normal CE?
Yeah, yes. I thought that it was supposed to be 63.
It is.
Okay. So I just didn't know if that gets changed there or not. I just saw it and I thought I'd point it out.
It's probably, to Kevin's point earlier, when we started the process, it's probably a cross-reference that we just need to make the change in this document.
That's fine. But I think it is important to say that, because it will touch on a comment I'll make later. Number seven, that's kind of referenced on pages 23 through 25, section B2. One of the things that I would like the board to consider is an opportunity to consider the permit holder maintaining an action plan for the conduct of sedation or anesthesia based on their level of permit. I think the opportunity here is it allows the rules to be simplified. You don't have to put a listing of equipment and supplies or a listing of drugs, either for reversal or otherwise, or emergency, because you could just look to other established standards such as the AMIS office-based anesthesia protocols, or the American Society of Dentist Anesthesiologists has a parameters of care, which I provided for reference. as mechanisms that would be more appropriate. And I would also make the side comment here that both our physician colleagues and nursing colleagues look to their society national guidelines or standards for how they conduct their practices. And I think it would be appropriate for us to do something similar. Next is comment number 8 on page 26, section B6. And so I'm going to go to that as a point of reference. Let's see here. So number 6 says on the top of that page, this idea of completing continuing education in high fidelity human simulation. And this sort of touches on a point I made about continuing education and a point I made about the additional process that a dentist anesthesiologist has to go through. I, for one, am all for education. I think education's important. I think it has a role in what we do as professionals, and I embrace the opportunity to continue education and foster that approach. But I think to handle educational approaches through rules is unhelpful and it's onerous. As a practicing anesthesiologist, I have a series of protocols and parameters that I adhere to. I'm also a diplomat of my organization, and as a diplomat, I have fairly strong or bold CE requirements that are actually well beyond what's even required in rule. What impacts me, as I mentioned earlier, is there's no requirement for this in medicine or in nursing. It's encouraged, and education is encouraged. But to actually put this in rule, I think, is beyond what we should be doing as a regulatory agency. And I would just discourage this type of indication. I think to support it is fine, but to actually require it, I think, puts a greater burden on us, as particularly as anesthesiologists. It's not a knock to education, but I think educational pursuits should be optional versus being required. And that's why I make that recommendation there. Next is pages 26 and 27, section D, talking about the pediatric endorsement. I know this was a big part of our current rules process and what we were trying to achieve through recognizing the opportunity to improve safety and outcomes with our pediatric population. I think it's important to note that we still have many issues, challenges, and problems with our adult population. And there's nothing to indicate that increased number of CE or other educational requirements are going to improve safety. And that's a pretty well-established fact. And so I'm concerned that we are requesting CE that is beyond what we should be doing for this type of area of practice in pediatrics. What I'd rather see the board do is include any CE that they're asking for with respect to that particular area or the pediatric endorsement to be included as part of the overall CE that's required versus making it additional. And so that's sort of the point to emphasize there. And I think that would be more appropriate. While still excessive, I think it meets a better end or outcome than making it additional. Next, I'll kind of just pass over number 10. I just think it's challenging on a anesthesia record to document how you monitor a pretracheal stethoscope, other than to say you're doing it, but you don't get any value that you could put on a record to say that it was appropriate or not. So I just wonder how that gets done. That's just more of a broad question for the board to consider as making it part of the rules. Next is number 11 on page 33, section N. This one's a little more interesting, and so I'll speak to it in terms of what I'm hopeful with intent. But I'll go to that section as well so I can demonstrate what I'm referencing on page 33. So it talks about the responsibility of a 1301 permit holder working with a qualified anesthesia provider. And this has come up in a couple of recent board cases. And what I recognized in both those cases was that the dentist seemed disconnected from the actual provision of anesthesia in their practice by the qualified anesthesia provider. And it was clear that people involved in that review felt that there was a responsibility for the dentist to be more involved and participant with what was happening. So to that end, I was proposing the language that is on the comments that I provided. And it's this idea of the dentist understanding that when they are working with a qualified anesthesia provider, it doesn't mean they abdicate their responsibility to the patient. In fact, they continue to have a responsibility for that patient. And they have a responsibility starting from the review of medical records, health status classification, understanding the plan for sedation or anesthesia, as well as their preparation for any emergency response. And that type of responsibility involves their review with that qualified anesthesia provider. But for the dentist to merely have the qualified anesthesia provider come in, and I'm actually saying this from the perspective of a dentist anesthesiologist as well, they have a responsibility to review the approach and plan for that procedure. It's something I do in my practice. I imagine my colleagues do it as well. I recently did it with a procedure I'm planning to do with a dentist in the coming week, where I had concerns about their medical history presentation, and I presented that to the dentist in light of the treatment that they were planning. The point being is, I think it would be more robust and appropriate for language to be added to really identify that the dentist does have a responsibility when working with a QAP, and they don't get to abdicate that responsibility when working with such a provider. And so that was sort of the intent behind that comment. Next is number 12 on page 34. I think Dr. Arnall will speak to this, and hopefully this will resonate with the board as well as the full board when they look at this. But I would like the board to understand that currently the way the rules are presented, the requirement for additional personnel is inconsistent for each permit level. I think one of the requirements is, or one of the issues is just how the language was presented. Instead of or statements at the end of a paragraph, they're and. And that makes it, it indicates that there can be, there need to be as many as four people present, for example, when a moderate enteral sedation is administered, which obviously seems excessive. So what I wanted the board to specifically look at is how the language is presented in the 1304 section regarding additional personnel. I think it's the cleanest in that section. And if I'm looking at the page number correctly, I'm looking at page 5859, which I'll go to and just to verify, and it's section K. Let's see, 5859, section K. Yes. So it talks about, oh, I'm sorry, that's for a 1303 permit holder. My apologies. So for the 1304 permit holder, I just want to make sure my reference is right. It's actually on page 64, section C, and it talks about the treating dentist shall ensure a second person other than the qualified anesthesia provider is present during a procedure that can be a person that's certified in PALS, ACLS, or completed a recognized continuing education course in advanced airway management. That seems to be the cleanest discussion or presentation of that additional personnel. And so I would just ask the board to look at that carefully to understand that they want it to be consistent across permit levels. And certainly if we're only asking the dentist working with a QAP to have one additional person, I don't think we should have multiple people required for other permit levels, which would be, I think, more appropriate in that application. Next is comment 14 on page 36, section A2. And this is more a comment about just identifying drugs. I realize I may be in a minority position here, but I'm not supportive of actually naming names, but rather just talking about drugs more generally. So I'll leave that comment as it is, and written. 15 is reference to something I already said. 16 is also in reference to a comment that I already made, and that's regarding that human simulation training. 17. It looks like, and I'm going to go to that. It's on page 44, so I'll go there just to start there to see what exactly I'm saying to make sure that it's appropriate. Okay, let me just go again and look. So that was page 44, section H. So here it just seems like they're in conflict. So it says here that in section G, it says that the 1302 permit holder shall complete an on-site evaluation every 6 years. But then section H says that if they meet the condition of subsection F2B, they don't need to have that done for their renewal. So I just wanted to make sure that the board was aware that there was some contradiction potentially there between section G and H that they might look to clarify and correct or resolve if, in fact, they see the same contradiction. It also supports my position. If you're not having an actual patient procedure being done, which I am very supportive of, particularly for renewal, I would encourage the board to consider an affidavit process. I think it's easier for everybody from a scheduling perspective, from a volunteer perspective, and certainly from a board staff perspective to have documentation submitted by affidavit versus actually having to arrange for a site visit if no patient treatment is involved. And so that's another consideration for that particular section. Next comment was on page 46 with regards to let's see what I referenced there. Section L. It talks about the 1302 permit holder shall establish a functional intravenous catheter for each patient receiving sedation services. The only concern I have there is that understanding that a 1302 permit holder can obviously administer enteral sedation, intramuscular sedation, and other forms of moderate sedation through different routes of administration, This section seems to imply that regardless of what they do, they would have to have an IV established. And I'm not sure that that's what is meant. And so I propose some language that might clear that up based on the intent of the board in that particular area. And that language is included. Page 48. Let's see what I wrote there. 48A1. Looks like I might have answered. I don't know, because it seems as though that is correct. Enteral moderate is there. I don't know if that's meaningful or not. Let me just go back and take a look. Maybe it looks like it's okay. So I'll just leave that one as it is. That might be a non-issue. Number 20, references a previous comment, for that permit level. Next is number 21, page 52, section B6. So it seems to be in contradiction to an already stated requirement that I referenced there. And so just something to have the board look at to see if it's, if they see it as the same way, but it looks to be redundant based on what's already stated in section D1 in that particular area regarding that training. Which is just below that. So that section is above what's listed in D1 in terms of maintaining PAL certification. So again, just maybe a grammatical correction there. Next is number 22. I think this is what I was referencing, and when I said made a previous comment. Yes, because I referenced page 64, section C, which was so I already discussed that. So I'll just leave that as it is. Same with comment 23. So I will just make some my final comment that I'll make is regarding the section 1304. I reviewed the statute as it's currently in place for the qualified anesthesia provider. And from what I can see in section 34, section 1304, starting on page 61, is that this section really applies to the qualified anesthesia provider who's not a licensed dentist. Because all the references in this section are to previous areas, particularly within section 1301, that reference already what a licensed dentist would be required to do. So I'm just proposing the addition of language after qualified anesthesia provider to say that is not a dentist licensed in Arizona. So R411-1304 would read, working with a qualified anesthesia provider or a QAP that is not a licensed dentist in Arizona. Because of that addition there, I make a subsequent comment on page 63 that's identified in comment 27 to delete that language. I would leave that up to the board. If it feels like it's merited to stay in that particular section, that's fine. I just felt that by adding it in that area where I proposed that it would mean the same thing at that in that section because it's the heading. I think that's about it. The other comments I have listed there are already referenced. I guess just the last thing to add, which I think would be appropriate, is on page 68 in that it addresses in R411-1306, it says enteral sedation, and I would encourage to add minimal before enteral sedation, since that's really what we're trying to achieve in that particular section. So that's all I have. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Caputo. I'm getting an echo. Hang on. Sorry about that. So I appreciate the comments. I know that there was a multitude of comments that were submitted, not just from you, and we've captured all 29 points. While I'm facilitating today's meeting, I'm not considered a presiding officer. So to accept, reject, or modify any of the comments for any of the comments that have been submitted today or even before today. So all we're doing is staff, and I think this should be clarified through just for legal ease. Seamus told me if I'm messing something up, we are going to accept all comments as comments submitted to the board, and the board will then accept, reject, or modify based on their review and discussion on April 16th. So I appreciate the 29 comments, and yes, we will move all 29 comments to the board for their review on April 16th. With that, does anybody, or Seamus, do you have anything to state to that first before I move on to Dr. Arnall? Okay. So let's go to Dr. Arnall. You're welcome to do similar to what Dr. Caputo did. And it may be helpful, at least for staff, Dr. Arnall, just to kind of clarify what you want the board to review, because I know we got several things, and even today you wrote the one that clarified the blue. So I know that you wrote comments specific to your desires, and then you wrote comments specific to the association you represent. So maybe as you give testimony, make some clarity to some of that.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. I'm really excited to be in this phase of this whole process. We've been doing this for a really long time, and I feel like I've gotten to know all of you by little tiny photo or little tiny moving heads on screens for the last several years. And I don't know if anybody will ever know all the effort that has been put into this. I don't know if the colleagues that we represent have any idea all the work that's gone in. And I just have tremendous respect for everybody who's been sticking this out and working hard to create something good for the providers in our state. I think I've read this document 1,000 times. At various times in the past, I've submitted a lot of comments, but I think other people have done a good job of editing a lot of the details. So I want to focus in on just a few things that I think are absolutely critical for this document to be functional and for it to be good for all the providers involved. As I look at this document, I feel like everyone has done a really good job of watching out for the patient. And that's fundamentally what this document is here for. So I won't speak to a lot of that kind of patient-centric content because I think it's good. But what I do want to speak to is just a couple of points that are important for the end user of the document and that are important for the board staff who will be implementing the use of this document. And when I say end user, I mean dentists and QAPs in the state who look to this document for guidance on what the rules are that govern their profession. So I'll get right to it. Really, I have three edits that I think are critical for this to to be a functional document. And then just a couple of side comments. The first one that I have is regarding staffing for general anesthesia, particularly staffing for patients younger than 8 years old. This is addressed in four sections in the document. It's directly addressed in 1301P and 1301R. Then in 1304C and 1304D, it addresses staffing, but it actually, I think it fell through the cracks. It fails to address staffing for patients younger than 8 years old, which was a fundamental, principle, added into this document. And so it does need to be the same across 1301 and 1304 because, these are mirror rules. 1301 applies directly or specifically to licensed dentists who provide general anesthesia. And then 1304, of course, is a broader umbrella to include non-dentist anesthesia providers. And these rules are intended to be mirrored. And in this particular instance, in the staffing for patients younger than eight, it for whatever reason didn't make it into the final document in 1304. So there's a very simple fix. In the last version of my statements that I sent in, as Ryan said, with the blue, I highlighted in blue what the specific edits would be so that it's easier to find in the rationale that I sent. As an individual and as a representative of my society, the Arizona Society of Dentist Anesthesiologists, we've had several providers very confused about the staffing requirement. And I think that confusion will amplify over time if we don't edit and fix it, because they look at the requirements in 1301 and it says you must do XYZ for a patient younger than eight. And then they look in the requirements in 1304 and there's none and they don't know which to follow. And even within 1301, there's differences in the two sections that address it in 1301. So it has created a tremendous amount of confusion. Very simple fix though. Specifically for the requirements for a patient younger than eight, 1301R is the section that the committee intended to be the correct section. So in 1301P, it would be very easy to fix. All it would have to read is a current certification, PALS or ACLS if the patient is less than 8 years of age or, and as Dr. Caputo pointed out, or is the word not and that we use in these sections. And then for 1304 to mirror that, it should do just as it does with all the other sections, and it should reference that correct section in 1301. So we would need in 1304D, this is the section that addresses staffing requirements, we just need to add in that reference, and it should be a fourth subsection in 1304D, and it should read, maintains the necessary staff listed in R411-1301 R1AB2. In two phrases, we can fix all of that confusion and we can make the staffing requirements for patients under 8 years old unified across all sections. So we propose that be done. To avoid confusion among providers and to make it consistent. Then the second one you can read in my document as well, was addressed, by Dr. Caputo, in his comments, because 1301 permit holders are now included in that umbrella of QAPs, and because 1304 is a mirror of 1301. Our QAPs that are licensed dentists in Arizona are beholden to 1301 and have done all of the attestations and have passed all of the requirements of 1301. Then in 1304, 1304 is designed to include the CRNAs and physicians in that umbrella and say, and the dentist that they work with needs to attest that they follow the exact same rules that are listed in 1301. So all of us play by the exact same rules, no matter where you come from, no matter what kind of QAP you are. But it does create a lot of actually a tremendous amount of redundancy. The way that it's written, as our local providers are reading it, are becoming extremely confused, because where they go to 1301, it's clear. And then when they get to 1304, it creates this circular redundancy, and they're totally unclear as to how to proceed with 1304. Because that redundancy creates, you know, circular paths between 1301 and 1304. So again, very simple fix. My simple fix is actually in perfect unison with Anthony's simple fix. And all that would need to be done is for R411-1304, it would read working with a QAP that is not a dentist licensed in Arizona. And then there's no confusion, there's no redundancy, there's no circles that our providers will get caught up in and create confusion. And it leaves the playing field absolutely equal. Everybody follows the exact same rules, and everybody knows exactly which section to turn to for their guidance. If you're a licensed QA or a licensed and permitted QAP, via the dental board, then you go to 1301. If you're a QAP licensed and permitted via the nursing board, the osteopathic board, or the medical board, you go to 1304. Very clear. I think with those two fixes, we will save ourselves as providers and as representatives of our organizations tremendous confusion, and we'll save the board staff endless hours of phone calls and emails trying to explain how to proceed with these rules. So that's my hope, is that those two critical fixes make it a good document for the end user and a good document for the board staff. So beyond those two, you know, I feel that those are critical. These other comments that I have are not necessarily critical, but I think we'll save some unnecessary work for board staff, and we'll clean up the document. For example, benzodiazepine and antiarrhythmic are misspelled in the document. That should be fixed. That's easy. In 1301 D2, it talks about the PEDS endorsement. It says that if you've done your residency within 2 years, that you do XYZ. If it's been more than 3 years, you do XYZ. Well, if you look at that, you know, up to 2 years here and more than three, that creates a year gap. So that's a very simple fix. It just needs to say under two and more than two, not more than three. Otherwise, you'll have lots of questions about what happens in that year gap. That's 1301 D2 that has that problem there. And then my final comment, just to save the board staff from processing thousands upon thousands of 1304 registrations, I would suggest that in 1304 A3, A, B, and C, that a parentheses and an S is put after name, QAP, number, and address. And what that will do is it will allow those 1304 registrations to handle multiples of each of those. And if you just consider for a moment what will happen if that doesn't happen, it will be literally thousands of duplicate forms coming in, because there's many dental practices that have five or more locations. There's many practices that have five or more dentists, and there's many QAP practices who have 15 or more providers. And if each form can't handle multiples, then for an example, a five practice location with five docs who uses a 15 person QAP practice will have to send in 375 forms to the dental board to cover all the combinations. And that will be just, yeah, and that's for one practice, right? So it'll leave the board staff absolutely inundated with forms, and it will water down the utility and the purpose of it. So I would suggest, just for the ease of the board staff handling this new requirement, put a parentheses and an S. That way, in section 1304A3, A, B, and C, when people fill out these forms, if they have two dentists and three QAPs and two locations, they can put those all on one form. Anyway, that's all that I have. My comments, I hope, they're designed to be helpful to the board and to be helpful to the end user. And like I said, after the first two to me is just fluff. But those first two, are tremendously important that we, make the staffing requirements for patients under 8 years of age, uniform across all sections, and that we clarify, that 1304 is for QAPs who are not licensed via the board, and 1301 is for QAPs who are licensed via the board, and that the requirements are the same for both. Thank you very much. And again, I appreciate being part of this and the hard work that everybody's done. It's been a good experience.
Thank you, Dr. Arnold. I probably should have started my comments at the very beginning of today's meeting with the same gratitude, because we wouldn't have got anywhere we got without the altruism of the committee members and those that attended regularly, even without sitting on the committee. Because I know that both you and Dr. Caputo, who are also here again today, Dr. Caputo was never on the committee, and then you got appointed to the committee at a later date. So I can't even tell you how grateful I am and its staff is that we had people that were concerned and wanted to see this through to its end. And we still have these conversations moving forward. So I appreciate your guys' time as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for looking out for the staff as well on that one fix. I mean,
yeah,
I was looking at Selena. She's looking ready to go forward with 1,000 a day, but I think she'd be tired after the first day. So it doesn't look like I have any more hands raised, but I'm happy to, I would welcome more public comments if somebody wants to. I know that Dr. Snell came in. If Dr. Snell, if you wanted to make any public comment, I'd be happy to capture that as best we could. Don't feel like I put you on the spot that you have to speak, but if anybody wants to speak that hasn't spoken, go ahead and raise the hand virtually. There's only now one member present physically, and he already spoke. So we'll go forward with virtual hands, and then we'll take them in the order that they're raised. And if we don't have any more, then we will conclude today's meeting.
But before I'm finished, may I ask one question, Ryan?
Yes.
You mentioned I did send in several different documents. Do you want me to combine all of this into one and send it to you?
Yeah, maybe do that, and then we can. That would probably be the easiest way for.
Okay.
Yasmin to put it together in a packet that will go to the board.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the offer. Okay, so Again, as stated, the earlier the comments, whether written or oral, again, I'm just a facilitator, not a presiding officer. There's no board member other than Dr. Hero, but he's not presiding over this and accepting or rejecting any of these comments. They'll all be presented. So whether you attended today or not, they'll all be presented to the board for the review on April 16th. That meeting starts at, remind me again?
At 3 p.m.
3 p.m. It's slated to go to 7. It will have to conclude on that date. So if it goes beyond 7, I mean, none of us really want a meeting to go beyond 7, but it likely could go past 5. So be prepared to go past 5 because that one will open up some doorways to allow some debate back and forth, on maybe clarifying statements that we've even heard today that somebody wants to ask Dr. Caputo or Dr. Arnell, who had the same comment, what exactly did you mean? And we'll just clarify those statements. So it could go a lot longer than today's oral proceeding. And with that, I again want to thank everybody. Does staff have any comments that you have? No? Okay. Awesome. Thank you again. I appreciate everybody's time. Thanks for participating and submitting your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan.